Good evening and welcome to Health Writers on the Air. I'm your host this evening, Steve Blank. This Sunday marks the 125th anniversary of the Battle of Haymarket Square, which was a significant step in the struggle for the 8-hour workday. The workers and union activists killed in that battle are buried in Forest Home Cemetery next to the grave of Emma Goldman, 10 miles west of Chicago. While a special ceremony is being held there Sunday here in Madison, the May Day protest is being led by the immigrant community. The rally will begin at 1 p.m. at Brittingham Park at West Washington and Park. Tonight's program attempts to point out the link between labor and immigration. Our first segment from health writer Rob is a report from the We Are One National Day of Action, which revealed some important insights into the state of the protest movement in Wisconsin. Next, I sit down with Mary and Andy Summers, who spent the winter in Tucson and Mexico, working with the group No More Deaths. Finally, we'll hear from Alex Gillis, an organizer with Madison's Immigrant Workers Union, or UTI, about the connection between immigrant rights and labor struggles, which will converge in the May Day protest Sunday.
Protest, poetry, emotion moving downstream. George Jackson rapping, black gorillas all around me. Them sound boy, better watch when I'm in the booth. With more bars than Momia, give you niggas truth. Puerto Rican, Coogee, Chagalia, cause it's in my roots. Like Billie Holiday, singing about the strangest fruit.
On the April 4th, We Are One National Day of Action for Workers' Rights, students gathered atop Bascom Hill to rally before marching down to the Capitol. While we rallied in high spirits, knowing that brothers and sisters around the country were joining us in recognizing the significance and power in uniting racial and economic struggles, a speaker at the front of the rally made us pause to reflect on how currently we are failing to achieve this. Today, the struggles of people of color do not receive the urgent attention they deserve. Most notably, the disproportionate poverty and unemployment concentrated in communities of color, and the racial profiling and deportation of immigrants, which, by the way, is coming to Wisconsin via Representative Pridemore. After a short introduction raising this issue, this very conscious speaker used a powerful spoken word to challenge us to think more deeply about the perspective of the colored community.
So today is the anniversary. We're commemorating Martin Luther King Jr.'s legacy, right?
Yeah.
Where's the black community? Cool. So now we know we need to be engaging with more people, right? When we're at the Capitol, try having a conversation with somebody that maybe doesn't look like you. Ask them what their struggle is, because it's very strategic. It's not necessarily our fault we don't know these things. The media strategically doesn't talk about the Pridemore bill, right?
Right.
Cool. Another thing, the media strategically only talks about the hood in very particular ways. That's where I'm from. My whole life, been demonized. My whole life, been called a drug dealer. My whole life, been called a baggy pants rapper. Not that I have any offense to that. So I'm going to talk a little bit about that, because we know that when union anti-union bills pass, that women are disproportionately affected. We know that people of color are disproportionately affected. We know that poor people are disproportionately affected. And I think it's time that we start putting in the spotlight the stories of poor people, of women, of queer folks, trans folks, people of color. So here's a little bit about me. Police can leave me scars the color of bleeding Mars, or stop my beating heart just for being dark. I wish it to be a farce, but I've been reading stars since I've heard Oscar Grant's name and seen the bark. Because I'm a tropical native, to hip hop I'm related. But my ancestors speak through me, I am not entertainment. Some wanna rap ghetto, cause the profit it makes them, but you are not hood just cause how often you say it. And so the lesson I'm learning is stay interested in serving. If salvation's what you seek, my head dressed in a turban. My hometown, old Carver, out of townies grew here, was more confused about my race than Robert Downey Jr. Cause I seen potheads cracked out, ready to drop dead, young guns pulling mats out, doing what Pac said. Whether you got bread or not fed, guaranteed you got lead. Everyone feels pain, but no one wants to stop it. The Philippines and Guam are full of Navy bases. Hardly any babies make it. Military sacrifice my islands for aviation. And I confront genocide on a daily basis. But no one talk about it. They afraid that they may be racist. Crazy hatred turned concern to security. I burned alive till I learned no one was hearing me. Battle with the shadow of Seattle one eerily. Absolutely no one in this world that can mirror me. Think it's the rain nearing me. The South End is dear to me. The place my homies snow plowing as they clearing streets. Cause they crack slanging, rap making, and gap breaking. I'm mask breaking. It's for them, I'll never be in the hat hanging. So these days, D stay involved in G shit. It's a struggle to stay mindful. Vietnam beaches. The whole slum's headed to die unwedded. We don't get caught like the gas we buy unleaded. Hood kids growing up, not knowing the spirit future. While laying on a destined past, but nearing fuchsia. Wavelength short, like our patience for minutia. Cause life got us in more positions than Kama Sutra. We see Pat sons and Bibles, or Gat skunk and rivals. The block where guns blasted from that sprung survival. It's black, gray, blue rivals over white flags. We die though, cause our eyes soak blood red like pyro. Ancestral spirit got me spitting flame, spiral. Celebrating the slums we from, doing rap with the Jaho. They call us slobs and say they take the high road. Well, it seems that they got it more twisted than a gyro. Dealing with this or dealing piffies? As real as this is, the deal with rich kids stealing this shit, I feel they dissed it. Cause they get the point like my last meal. I missed it. Then they blame only us when we grabbing steel biscuits. Thank you.
If you're going to successfully link struggles such as labor rights, immigrant rights, and racial disparity to form a more powerful movement which can successfully bring change to our country, an important obstacle that continues to divide us is race. Another young man spoke to racial prejudices which enable the anti-immigrant bills being introduced in different states. Here's what he had to say.
So as you know, that bill is kind of based on that question that sometimes you might get. They say, you know, where are you from? And when you try to tell them that maybe you were born in America, you get that secondary follow-up question, you know, where are you really from? This is my response to that question. I'm from Chicago. No. Really, I'm from Chicago. What do you mean, really from? I'm from Chicago. You still don't believe me. I was born in the same atmosphere as you to inhale the same air, but you noticed I don't breathe like you. I was raised in the same land to walk the same city blocks, but you noticed I don't move like you. I mean, I'm sure we even swam at the same beaches downtown, saw our reflection in the water, but you noticed I don't look like you. I don't reflect you. So you want to question my swimming experience as if I was some type of borderline resident, but that only makes you more of a borderline racist. Oh, okay. You want to compliment my English? So surprised that my native tongue could roll through language barriers? That's probably because you tried to diagnose my dialect without actually having a dialogue with me. I'm so tired of monolingual ears listening for stereotypes of locution. Oh, by the way, I better hurt to know I got a larger diction than you in English. But don't confuse my wordplay for foreplay. See, I'm trying to get straight to the point. My syntax makes sense, but your attitude doesn't want change. Selective hearing still searches for accents to mark me. Why must prejudiced eyes see a stranger before a neighbor? And does your mind need to constantly characterize me as this perpetual foreigner? I shouldn't have to flash cards to teach you. You being ignorant doesn't make me an immigrant. My birthrights didn't come with a temporary visa or a need for a third degree to singe me. I was born without birthmarks. I don't need you to brand me. Just understand. We were born in the same environment, raised in different backgrounds. If you want to know about my origins, try asking how I was raised, not where. Thank you. Yeah.
Keep my eyes on the prize when I aim and shoot. Bad people posse do what I came to do. It's Molotov music, everybody clear the room. Shot dash, fist in the air, my nigga stay in tune.
Pittsburgh, London, all hoods, all slump. You wanna know who's next up to lead? Listen to them, my people. Respect to Solid.
This is health writer Steve Blank. I'm here in the studio with health writers Andy Summers and Mary Summers, who spent the winter in Arizona, and they've just returned. Mary has been on the show before, speaking about an organization she works with when she goes to Arizona called No More Death. Welcome back, Mary Summers.
Thanks, Steve. It's good to be back in Madison.
Were you working with No More Deaths again this year?
Yes, I was. And last year, I made the mistake of not bringing my passport along. And, of course, 3 days after I was in Tucson, was drawn to No More Deaths and was not able to go over to the Mexican side of the border and give medical care, which, as a nurse, I wanted to do. So this year, as soon as I arrived, it was one of the first things that I did. There was an area that the people who have been recently deported eat in. I'd say there was probably 100 people eating. They can go there the first week that they've been deported. What the Border Patrol does is drop people who are being deported over on the U.S. side and then watch them walk over. And when they walk over, and if it wouldn't be for this Jesuits that are working on that side along with No More Deaths, I mean, people would just be left there in limbo, not knowing what to do. So, of course, the first thing they do is give them something to eat, and we took care of lots of sore feet. I think my first patient was worried she had some problems with her neck and chest because they carry just about everything they can on their back. This is maybe the first kindness and the first kind of help these people have seen in a very long time.
When you're working with these patients and helping to restore them and show them some kindness, how well do you get to know them? Do you get to hear some stories from them?
When I'm taking care of someone and I see that they have lived here for a while, then we do the survey, and that's how I get to really understand their story more, because we ask them, you know, about 4 pages full of questions and hear these sad stories and see these are, you know, just sweet people who are trying to live in the United States, take care of their families, and one day they just don't come home. And many times their families don't hear from them. And one of the most popular things that No More Deaths does is they furnish phones to people to call and let family members know where they are.
So give us a picture. Relate one of the stories.
A man comes to mind that was 57 years old that was just driving down the street. And they picked him up in the Phoenix area.
Why did they pick him up?
He's just driving down the street, he said. I think a thing that gives away, there's a lot of gardeners. A lot of migrants are gardeners. So if they see a truck and it looks like you've got carpentry or garden equipment and you're Hispanic, you're just a, you know, you're just a target for them.
So they stop you for any reason?
That's what they're not supposed to, but that's what they're doing. That's what the people tell me. And I ask them, why did they stop you? They don't know. They say they were just driving down the street.
Let me turn to Andy Summers for a moment. Can you give us an update on the legislation, the controversial legislation in Arizona?
Well, there's a lot of pending legislation, and there's a lot of past legislation. The big one was called SB 1040, and that has been challenged in the federal courts as being unconstitutional. 1040 created the responsibility or allowed law enforcement without any kind of probable cause, on mere suspicion, to stop someone and ask them for their papers. What that means is you're driving while colored, because they don't generally stop white people. The white privilege does not fit in this.
Tell us about the nativism movement down there in Arizona.
Oh, you know, we went to live in the belly of the beast for a couple of months, and the beast was awake, and the beast never slept. Nativism has been with us since we became a country, and it appears in different forms. It generally hates everybody, including American natives, that's not a WASP or a white person or something like that. It's hard to define. They don't like Mexican people.
Well, you know, while you were gone, those 3-4 months, we've had this tremendous uprising here in Wisconsin as a reaction to Scott Walker's bill. And one of the things with all these hundreds of thousands of people coming together, all these great conversations taking place, there's this growing awareness that the people in power, the people that are behind, you know, the Koch brothers, the people that are behind Scott Walker and Paul Ryan, they're seeking to sort of divide and conquer. So hatred is a big part of that. One of the things that the working class and the working poor here are realizing is that they're all being pitted against each other. You know, people who have union jobs, people who have some benefits are being pitted against people who don't. Is there any sense in any of these Arizona communities that the Mexicans and the immigrants are their brothers? Is there any sense of that? Or is it just hatred across the board?
You got to divide Arizona into different parts. Tucson was a wonderful place. It was filled with people who cared, people who got involved with things. A lot of the rest of the state are retired white people who don't want to pay taxes. They have this Western mentality about carrying guns. They want to carry guns everywhere. I was walking into McDonald's one time, and they got a sign up here on the window that says, "This is a gun-free area." McDonald's? Nobody seems to know or care why these Mexican people are coming here. These people go to a lot of difficulty, dangerous difficulty to get here. And the reason is they have no jobs. They can't feed their families. Simple as that. And why? Take it one step further. The United States destroyed their economy. Wonderful thing called NAFTA. We went in there and we destroyed their economy. We sold goods for less than they could sell them. We subsidized our farmers who could raise corn and sell it in Mexico for less. Destroyed the economy. People lost their jobs. They had no way to live. And that's why they're coming to our country.
Well, are you aware of any organizations down there that are educating people about class warfare so people can understand that the corporations, you know, want people pitted against each other and fighting amongst themselves?
Our church is trying to organize people like us to stand up between the vigilantes and the children who are marching. The vigilantes are these gun people. And they come and they swear at the children. They call them Mexicans. Go back to where you came from. So our church group tries to put a line of people between them to protect. There's no physical thing. It's just a lot of harassment. That's the kind of stuff that the people in Tucson are doing. They're fighting, and boy, did they take joy out of what Wisconsin was doing. And when they see what Wisconsin was fighting for, one of the things that woke them up, they didn't have any of these rights. They didn't know what it meant to have them taken away because they didn't have them. So they're beginning to become very aware of what the people need and should be doing. So, yeah, there's still a lot of racism there. It's just amazing.
Well, what do you think about the overall approach to the immigration situation by the Obama administration?
Well, of course, it's heartbreaking. It's very heartbreaking because the Obama administration thought that what he could do is win over the Republicans by having more deportations than George Bush did and having more deportations in 2010 than in 2009. There was almost 400,000 in 2009, and they really went out and tried to get more than that in 2010, and they did 400,000. So there's been about 800,000 deportations, which has involved many, many raids and many people who have lived here a long time being deported. Anyway, it's a very sad situation because Obama didn't keep his promise to the Latino people. But we've all seen, like here in Wisconsin, what happens when everything is red. It's just hatred at its highest peak. One of the last things I do want to mention is that we did see as a shining light was there was a new U.S. prosecutor appointed. where last year they were going after anyone who was giving humanitarian aid and arresting them and trying to have them be felons. That seems to have stopped with the new U.S. prosecutor, Dennis Burke.
If people are interested in finding out more about what the organization No More Deaths is doing exactly down in Arizona, how can they find out?
No More Deaths has a website, www.nomoredeaths.org.
Well, Andy and Mary Summers, thank you for being our guest on Health Writers.
Thank you for having us, Steve.
This is Health Writer Rob Lewis. The struggles of those at the bottom of our society has a great deal to tell us about the problems we are seeing. This week I spoke with Alex Gillis, who is an organizer for UTI, the Immigrant Workers Union in Madison. We discussed the importance of immigration and why it is no coincidence that the upcoming International Workers' Day demonstration is being organized by immigrants. I want to not just talk to you about May Day and immigration, but step back and look at the bigger picture that's happening right now. As we're having an economic crisis, and then there's this outburst of struggle. And I think an issue that people are often missing is that it's a class struggle, and the way that, you know, people are kind of divided along different lines. I guess the first question that I think would start it best is, why is immigration important?
Immigration is important because we make up a big part of this country population and definitely workforce, between 5 to 12%. And, you know, as we always say, what happened to some of us can happen to all of us.
Gillis goes on to point out how that the rolling back of rights is nothing new to immigrants, and that immigrants losing their rights has led to the decline in working conditions for all workers and enabled the latest broad attacks on union rights.
Many times, undocumented immigrants who, because they don't have papers, they are forced to work in worse conditions. They are many times abused. Fair enough, the tactics that have been used against undocumented families in this country for the last 20 years, now it's being used as well. Against other layers of the worker class, like, for instance, the public employees, like here in Wisconsin. So clearly, when we talk about immigration, we are talking about human rights. We're talking about, you know, a portion, a large portion of our population that is living without rights. They're living under harassment. But as well, we're talking about the tactics of the big corporations to keep destroying the working and the life conditions of all the workers and not only the immigrants.
Sure. So could you elaborate more specifically how the attack on immigrants and immigrant rights is related to the attack on workers' rights?
This layer of populations get lower wages for the same work, and that what it does is pulls wages down for everybody. And up to the day that we are all treated equal, they are going to keep using these political differences, these divisions in our class to really push the wages down, and not only the wages, but the ability to have a union, the ability to have benefits, because that's what they do. They justify, they dehumanize immigrants, and then they say, okay, they don't deserve to have all the things that you do have. But of course, later on, the market is flooded with this labor that is overexploited and is determining the wages for everybody and only for the immigrants.
So I'm just wondering, if this issue is so important, you know, where you have right now deportations of thousands of people and families being torn apart, lives really being ruined right now by the current immigration policy and that being intensified right now, why is there pretty much no coverage? Why aren't we talking about this more if it's such a key component of the stagnation with our economy and the downward turn for workers?
Well, I think, of course, from the corporate media, we cannot expect nothing else, right? The immigrant movement is silent. There's a lot of actions that has been done by activists and organizations, rallies. But the media is going to silence it if it's corporate, because they are serving the interests of the corporation, which is, of course, not to put any light on how this is being used against the worker class. But actually, the idea is to confuse people even further, right? Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I think we won't ever have a common front and put this as the first thing in the table, in the agenda of everybody, until the unions and not only the unions, but the progressive movement understand that immigration, it is not a single issue, but actually it's everybody's issue. And I think that can be said fairly about other struggles, like the LGBTQ community, the black community, the Hmong community. We have a lot of issues, and the only reason that there's no light right now in the discussion is because we still have this idea that this is something that is single and only affected a group of people and not everybody.
Sure. So I just want to jump in and focus on this year's May Day, which is a really significant one. Historically, it's, I believe, the 125th anniversary of the Haymarket riot and the battle for the 8-hour workday. But that's converging with May Day being a site for immigrants right now to have a place for struggle for their rights. So I'm wondering, do you think these two struggles are going to come together on this protest, or is it part of just the beginning of a process where they can link up and become more powerful?
You know, a funny story is that 150 years ago, when the decision was taken to do a general strike and mass demonstration for the 8-hour day, actually the flyers were published in four or five different languages, among them Polish and German, just because at that point the fight for the 8 hours was done by immigrants and by people who were from this country perhaps one generation before. But the idea that the immigrant movement or the immigrants were actively in the labor movement is nothing new. And actually, May 1st is the International Workers' Day for the same reason, because we see ourselves as workers. We don't see ourselves in a different movement. So I think what we're going to see in May 1st this year is we're going to see definitely a lot of unions and a lot of rank-and-file members who have been activated again during the process against Scott Walker and the repair budget bill. And I think, I mean, what we're having as a feedback is that many unions are working very hard right now to turn people into the rallies and make a very successful rally. So definitely I would say that this is not the beginning of the process to converge to the two movements, but I think this is the awareness of the reactivation of the labor movement taking on immigration as well. So we are very hopeful that definitely as the labor movement is uprising, the labor movement is taking on the streets again, they are incorporating struggles like immigration. We are making a cohesive block against the policies of Scott Walker.
Sure. So I'm just wondering if you can talk about why people should come out to this May Day demonstration and the specific politics and demands behind it.
This May 1st is very important because, well, first, the struggle against the policies of Scott Walker is far to be over. We just live historic exciting first stage in February and March with 100,000 of people on the street. And we learned that on the street, we have the support of the public opinion. We do have the strength, the numbers to really paralyze this state, to paralyze the political life. And even though we didn't win, initially we didn't lose either. And I think May 1st is going to be the next big rally when we are going to show that we are only regrouping and thinking how we are going to take on this challenge of Scott Walker. And at the same time, not only that, but the budget that he's laying out now that he want to pass in June is very bad. I mean, it's really targeting almost every single sector in the worker class Wisconsin. The poor, the unemployed, the immigrants, the students. So May 1st definitely is an opportunity to get out on the streets, to keep on with the movement that we started in February and actually add other elements like the budget or this Arizona bill that we have to stick together and we have to fight strong to stop it. It's going up, up, up. It's going up, up. It's going up, up, up.
Well, that does it for tonight's program. Thank you for joining us, and remember to go to the May Day Rally Sunday. In the meantime, visit us at healthwriters.wordpress.com. Good night.